In this episode of the Zista podcast, we're going to continue the conversation on UX design with Nishant Jain and touch upon some interesting aspects, including what you can do to succeed in this space. Welcome to the Zista podcast, where we invite industry leaders and academicians to answer questions that students have within a particular subject area. Today, we're continuing the conversation with Nishant Jain in the field of UX design. Let's go straight to the session. Welcome back to the podcast, Nishant. I'm absolutely delighted to have you back and continue the conversation on UX design.
Thanks, Amit.
I wanted to ask you, Nishant, what are some of the essential skills that aspiring professionals need to enter the field of UX design?
So in my experience with interviewing a lot of design aspirants, whether those are freshers or experienced, I feel that currently a lot of people focus on the process part, right? Now, we talked about process in the last segment, but that is not the end goal, right? That is just an enabler for you to structure your entire work so that you can get outcomes in a more defined way, right? What I feel, as a biggest skill that a designer has, and the designers which I've seen become really good, they are a lot perceptive about everything that is around them. So essentially, we're trying to solve real world problems with the products that we are building, right? You could be building a taxi booking application or a food delivery application or a music player. Beyond the screens, these are basically products which are being used by people, right? So having a very good understanding of how people think and how people behave is very crucial for you to become a good UX designer, right? And this is something that you cannot learn it very quickly. You just have to continuously practice and be perceptive about things in your environment, be exposed to a lot of different applications, talk to people about, general behaviors, and then incorporate that while you're designing things. So I think the biggest skill one would have is to understand people and the world around them.
So that power of observation is really important. And I'm sure, even in the UX research stage, something that we discussed in the last segment, I'm sure, some companies are also doing things like focus groups or perhaps getting into real world scenarios, looking at how people are interacting with a particular app or a particular system to get a better hang of what they can do differently, what they can do better.
Correct. And again, these are all frameworks that help structure this entire activity. Right. But at the end of the day, if you as a designer are observant, and that's what I tell designers in my team, and a general advice to all designers is that what you observe and pick up in your day-to-day activities when you're not designing will dictate how well you can design when you are actually working.
Right? Interesting.
So, I just tell, even if you're not ordering food from outside, just use the application. If you're not doing online shopping, use that application. Just be aware of, what's going on generally, because any new feature, anything, any part of behavior, user behavior that you can possibly get out of that, it will help you in some form or the other, right?
Awesome. Continuing the conversation, I want to ask you, right, what do you see as one of some of the most rewarding aspects of actually being in this space, being in the field of UX and UI design?
I think a UX designer has a lot of responsibilities, the entire team, right? And as I mentioned in the beginning, that it can actually, in a lot of ways, dictate whether that product will succeed or not.
Right.
Right. And I'm not saying this is the only thing, because there's also product market fit, there's marketing, there's a lot of different, political scenarios. A lot of things do actually impact how a product will work or not. But yes, once the other factors are factored in, a good experience generally leads to better sales or, you know, more usage of the product, right? So the most rewarding aspect I would feel is, you know, once you've done that hard work and you launch that entire application and you start getting the feedback from the customers, maybe something can be working or not, and you actually go around fixing it. So I think the real fun begins once the application is live and in hands of the customers, because at that point of time, you get the feedback and then, you know, it's your base is built and you basically just have to keep making it better and address the user's problems one at a time. And, you know, that entire feedback mechanism, you know, getting that feedback, fixing it and then testing it out and then getting that positive feedback in return, I think is very rewarding.
Really interesting to hear this. When you're receiving feedback, there are so many people that can come forth with feedback, but not all of that feedback would be relevant. So is there a system, a process, or a checklist that you could perhaps use to understand what kind of feedback I should act on and what kind of feedback I can maybe choose to ignore?
So not ignore a lot of feedback. It depends about on various factors. For example, if you're getting a lot of feedback in one particular area, that is a cue for you to act on it faster than, you know, maybe a few sets of users are not liking some part of it. So that is something that can go down in priority, right? I think apart from that, every feedback should be listened to and catered to at one point, but it has to be prioritized, right? So something that really breaks or is not aligned with the basic functionality of the product, that definitely has to be fixed first. And then all the other, even here, I would say, you know, the mandatory versus nice to have, right? If certain nice to have features are broken or not working well, you can fix them after you fix the basic mandatory functionality of the application, right? So I feel that, you know, feedback has to be heard from all sources and acknowledged. And then you act as in, because they are, you know, these are real world problems. There's budget concerns, there's timelines, there's everything, right? So you could only solve a few problems at a time. So that's where prioritizing them works.
Makes sense. Absolutely. Okay. I wanted to ask you, Nishant, let's say I'm a fresh graduate. Okay. And I really want to enter the industry. What can I do to create a UX portfolio? You know, how do I stand out in the job market?
Touching on that point of having interviewed so many people and, you know, I see a lot of reliance on process. So I feel that a lot of young aspirants focus on showcasing the process rather than their skills, right? And when I interview them, so their process in a document format could look very impressive because, you know, they followed a standard that doesn't sort of fit that entire thing well into that, the different stages. But once I start talking to them about the different steps or parts of those processes, that is where I start getting a feeling that they're not really that, they've not understood the process well enough, right? It's more of understanding the steps of the process versus how that process actually helps them, right? So I always tell people that if there are five steps to a process, right, just ask yourself, how is that one particular step helping you go from the previous step to the next one, right? Remove it, don't have it, and see what impact it has. Ask yourself, you know, why we are doing this, right? So if you're structuring a UX portfolio, showcasing the process is important, but then understanding how that entire thing helps you move from one part of the other to the next is important. Because essentially what we're doing with that is we are taking requirements in layman terms and then expanding on it to the various stages so that we can actually create screens. Right. So imagine that, you know, a simple requirement could be that we want to build a food delivery application.
Sure.
It's just a statement, right? But then see what happens as an outcome, right? You get a Swiggy or a Zomato as an end result. So how do you go from that particular statement to these screens, right? And then the process is important. But then I ask yourself, why are we creating a user journey, right? If you don't create a user journey, what will happen? Will I be able to move forward? If I move forward, will that outcome be as good as the one with using a user journey, right? So understanding why the process is needed at that point of time. And then, as I said, just try to be in the user's shoes, try to understand the problem well, and then use the process to move one step after the other to create those screens at the end, right? And if you're able to explain that in an interview,
sure,
right? Not just the steps, but if you can showcase that your thinking is structured and you know what you have written there, you have a higher chance of getting selected.
I can relate to that, because what you're saying is you want someone to really exhibit that they can think, you know, and think logically. And therefore, there may be an extra reliance on a process where someone may tend to look at, say, some tried and tested framework or a tried and tested, you know, these are the bare minimum steps that you need to have. And they try and force fit that into whatever app that they're designing. But you're asking a more fundamental question, that why, how, explain this to me. And if they're unable to do that, then that's where things start to break down. So they really need to put more thought into it. Really create something with a lot of creativity and be willing to argue that point. Now, not all of those arguments may be true, but at least if they strongly believe in that, you know that they have a sound mind and they have a logical thinking process and they're willing to stick by their stand. And you could guide them and mentor them to do it differently if required, but at least that's what you want, right? Someone who has that conviction and also the logical approach.
Exactly. And when I'm interviewing people, I look for people who can actually take a stand and not just affirm to all the points that is part of the process or what I'm saying, right? Because that shows that you're actually involved in that entire discussion. You might have a point that is different from what the general viewpoint is, right? And that is where you can do something different, right? Because if you understand, so to do something different, you have to understand what exists currently.
Correct.
Very well. And then be willing to, you know, experiment going out of that safe zone, right? Because a lot of these crazy ideas do become features. I'm not saying all the crazy ideas work, but then, you know, that's where the innovation starts, basically, right? Thinking of a different approach than just following what is being done.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Absolutely. You also talked about mapping user journeys, and I would imagine that is a fairly intricate task when you're in that stage, when you're in that process. Are you able to map out all possible customer journeys, or actually that's not possible, you know? If, you know, from a practical viewpoint, you can't possibly think of all case scenarios. So what's your view there?
So that's where the iterative approach helps, right? We could start off with a very basic sets of user journeys, right, that cater to the main users of the application. And then, you know, once you've identified those pain points, because the basic ones will get captured there, right? It's very hard to miss, in my experience, the very basic ones, right? And then you can have that activity, you know, numerous times to enhance the entire experience. Because a lot of time what happens with existing applications, we create the existing journeys and the proposed journeys, right?
Okay.
So your existing ones could keep changing, right? And then once you, you know, go back and see the existing journeys, you could then find loopholes to those and potential features, right? So as you said, you know, it's impossible to just sit in one go and think of everything which is wrong and then try to fix it, right? So it has to be iterative.
You've stressed that, and it really makes sense, you know, from that perspective. Let's say I'm transitioning from another field. So maybe I'm a design student in another field or a professional in another field. I want to move to the field of UX design. What advice would you give such candidates?
So yeah, are you talking about other fields in design to UX or any field in general?
The UX design in you has already thought of the different case scenarios. I see that. But let's keep it simple, you know, from the perspective of someone's in an existing design field and they want to transition to UX design.
Okay. So this is also, I see a lot happening in the industry. People who've been graphic designers or, you know, product designers physical product designers or, you know, designers in other fields, they want to move to UX design, right? Because there's a lot of opportunities there as well. And, you know, it's something that interests a lot of people, right? What I feel is that we have to, in my experience building this team at Nitrous, I feel that after a point of time, you realize that even within design, there is a specialized niche area that you are naturally good at.
Sure.
That is something that you relate to and you are quick to understand. Right? So, for example, someone coming from a graphic design field to a UX design role, they could be very good with the graphic aspects of it, right? They could work very well with colors, with layouts and everything. But then they have to ask that, leaving that behind and getting into something where you'll not be working with, you know, these things anymore, which you're good at. You'll be, you know, talking to customers, jotting down those requirements, doing all of these processes and then figuring out solutions. So is this something that is naturally interesting to you? Or do you feel that this is something that you can do a good job in, right? If the answer is yes, then you gradually, you know, start moving towards this. But if the answer is no, I think every field within design has its own place. And a lot of times, you know, people can do well in all the fields, right? So asking that fundamental question is very important.
Makes a lot of sense. This is definitely a field where you require a lot of skill in the game, and only someone who is deeply committed, really interested, can actually do well, right? In fact, talking about doing well, I also wanted to ask you, how do you, or how can other young professionals actually stay up to date, you know, stay on top of their game, become UX design pros? It would be really interesting to hear from you on that point as well.
So if you're really enjoying the design field, right, there's a natural tendency to be within a community and following people, you know, whether it's on YouTube, on Instagram, physical meetups, right? So once you're in that space, and, you know, there's, so that's where community helps a lot, because once a new trend emerges, the community basically picks that up, and, you know, it cannot go unnoticed by the entire community, right? So if you're part of a community, you are interacting with different designers and, you know, people, not just from your particular stream of design, but other designers in general, right? If you're part of groups, if you're part of meetups, you know, doing that on a regular basis, just it's a very organic way of keeping up to date with whatever's happening. Because what happens is that, you know, a lot of times when we're busy with our work and just focused on that, we tend to just be exposed to what we are looking at or we are searching for, right? But then if you just go out and talk to, you know, any different person, just from their particular experience, you could get a lot of insights that you would not probably even think of looking for on Google, right? So, you know, just being an active part of the community just helps in a very organic way.
Awesome. And I think what you're saying is also very logical. And you've raised a very, very important point. I'm sure this particular tip can really serve people well when they want to stay up to date. I would say not only in the context of UX design, but even in any field of design that they may be interested in, being part of that community, actively contributing, learning from peers, learning in some cases from mentors as well. I'm sure there are always people who are more ahead in the game, more senior in the industry, and they may have a more forward-looking perspective. So connecting with them, following them, I think that makes a lot of sense. So thanks for highlighting that, Nishant.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, mentors are very crucial in someone's journey. But, you know, the thing with mentors is that you cannot get access to a lot of their time all the time, right?
Sure.
So whenever you get time, just take in all that advice, and then the community, which is available much more, that is where you can then, you know, expand on those things.
Nishant, thanks once again for joining us on the podcast. We've really touched upon some interesting points in the field of UX design, and I'm sure that the advice that you've shared will serve students well. In fact, even young professionals who are still looking to scale up in their career, I'm sure they'll really appreciate hearing what you have said. And, you know, thank you for making time and being on the podcast.
Thanks, Amit. Thanks again for having me. And this is something that I could just talk about for hours. So, yeah, pleasure is mine.
Awesome. Thank you. Nishant covered some really interesting points, some good ground, and practical advice that all of us can use if we want to build a career in the field of UX design. Follow our channel on YouTube. You can also follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our handle is the Zista Podcast. This episode has been created by the fantastic team at Zista, which includes Danish Shah, Udita Arana, and Russell Aldridge. This is your host, Amit Ahuja, signing out. Till we meet again, we'd say, stay curious.